This is ESPN Radio.
Oh, yeah. It's the 6 o'clock hour. Canty and Gola Jr. on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. Join the conversation at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And, Mike, we had this conversation a little bit earlier in our show, and you know I'm a proud Big Blue alum, but I was just looking at some of the numbers from the franchise over the past four seasons, and the record is ugly. The New York Football Giants, since the infamous Odell Beckham Jr. boat trip, are 18-47. 18-47. I can't believe that we're talking about this team going on four seasons with four consecutive double-digit loss years. I can't believe that's the state of affairs, yet that's where we find Big Blue, and they got the season off to a rocky start on Sunday with that L that they caught from the Denver Broncos in an effort where Daniel Jones in that offense mustered 170 total yards of offense through the first three quarters. Mike, I can't believe how far this organization has fallen, and I'm not necessarily sure there's a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of getting past their losing ways.
No, and I do love the idea that we're going to start that timestamp with the boat picture, right? Like, at some point, I don't know if it's an E60 or a full-blown 30 for 30, Chris, but we got to get that whole crew together and just have a conversation about that weekend. Like, we've seen Victor Cruz around here and asked him about that before. It was one of the guys as a part of that picture, but I feel like I need the full story behind that entire trip down to Miami during the, what was it, during the bye week before the postseason started?
Or yep.
During, yep.
It wasn't even a bye week,
no,
though. It was the off day.
They went
down there on the off day. I think they left right after the Washington game, headed to Miami. They were hanging out with the Biebs on the boat, and I can't imagine that that's the formula that you want to have in your game prep leading up to the playoff matchup you had in Green Bay. So it was a weird time for the Giants. They came out in Lambeau Field, all the receivers with their shirts off, thinking that they were trying to prove something, and then they went out there and they laid an egg. And so I just can't see the franchise from that point on. They haven't been able to get off the mat from that moment. And so we looked at this season as an opportunity for that to happen. With all the investments that Dave Gettleman made on the offensive side of the ball, none of those investments were able to pay dividends in Sunday's game. And now they've got a short turnaround on the road against a division opponent in the Washington football team in week two. And that's a game that we pointed to and we said it might not necessarily be a must-win, but it feels like it's a can't-lose for the Giants in terms of being able to start their season and get this thing back on track.
Yeah, and Chris, I think it's always interesting to consider the circumstances, right? Because we talked earlier about the Dallas Cowboys and said if they were to lose to the Chargers this weekend, their 0-2 would feel a lot different than the Giants' 0-2. Also because the Giants would include a loss in the division, which is worth noting for mm-hmm. this. But it's just what you said. It's there hasn't seemed to be an end in sight. And if you came back game one and you saw some of the solutions to problems from last year solidified, you might feel better. But I looked at that team and said, all right, we talked about them not really having much of an edge pass rush from last season. Check that box. There was not much of an edge pass rush against a Denver line that's good, not great, that's well-coached and getting better personnel-wise. So, all right, let's look on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive line. Good, not great performance there. I mean, we saw Nate Solder give up some stuff. But again, Von Miller in that pass rush, you can kind of expect some of that. Saquon Barkley didn't look 100%. Daniel Jones turning the ball over, fumbling it at a pivotal time. Like, Chris, stop me when you've heard a new problem for the Giants. This is all the same old stuff. And unfortunately, it seemed like everyone had a part in making sure none of these mistakes went away. None of these mistakes were corrected, or at least in total, going into week one. So I don't know how you're allowed to have a lot of hope there.
No, exactly. And Dave Gettleman has been around since the end of the 2017 season, and yet some of these same issues that have continued to pop up are things that he addressed in his introductory press conference, saying that he was going to prioritize, like the offensive line. He said he was going to focus on the hog mollies and that he was going to be able to solidify that in front of Eli Manning or whatever quarterback that would be the Giants' future. And that hasn't happened. We said that they were going to be able to figure out how their offense could be more explosive. That hasn't happened. So to your point, some of the issues that have plagued this team in the past, they continue to be issues moving forward. And I think what adds an extra degree of urgency, or what should add an extra degree of urgency for those that are in charge over there, is that the owner, John Mara, came out this offseason and said that we committed the resources to make this a better team. And while he thinks they are better on paper, he fully expects them to go out there and prove it and to be in the conversation for playoffs. Now, I think he stopped just short of issuing a playoff mandate. But, I mean, when the owner comes out and has that kind of talk, that should put everybody in the organization on notice that they need to get it done this season. Otherwise, you could be talking about not just changing your quarterback, but changing your general manager and overall your hierarchical structure.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and I'm with you. Those owners, happy to cut the checks. And as a fan of a franchise, it's all you can ask for is for your team to go out there and spend money. This is all, I think, going to continue to be an indictment of Dave Gettleman here. Like, for Daniel Jones, this has been exactly who he's been. And you look at the places he's spent money on this, they've been places that have struggled. Like, it was awkward yesterday watching Kadarius Toney, who was a first-round pick. They tried to get him involved in some of these gadget plays, tried to get him involved in some of the offense in those spots. And I kept looking at him as, no, if a guy who I loved in college, like, what a fun player at Florida. He's a joystick, for God's sakes, out there on the field. But when you're a team that needs the kind of interior offensive line help, the offensive line help overall that you have here, you failed to acquire pieces that have so far shown promise in those spots. And Chris, I wonder now for this team, as we look over the course of this long season, what it's going to mean for Daniel Jones and what it's going to mean for Dave Gettleman. Because I think those can be two different things, right? We've seen from Daniel Jones bits of promise in some spots. Like, there were good throws in that game. There was poise under pressure at certain times. It honestly reeks of a lot of the Sam Darnold syndrome here, where I don't know if I can blame coaching or blame all of that as specifically, but I say you've seen enough there where someone else might take a chance on him, but if you're New York and this trajectory continues, I'm not sure how comfortable you're going to be bringing that guy back for a number potentially to your franchise.
No, I don't know that you can stay committed to Daniel Jones if he doesn't prove this year that he is your franchise guy moving forward. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to use that uncertainty argument similar to what some people were trying to say with Sam Darnold and the Jets. I don't know that that's going to fly when it comes to Daniel Jones' fate as the Giants' starting quarterback, just because the organization has committed a ton of resources to being able to help that guy out. I mean, you got the second overall pick from the 2018 draft in the backfield with you. You went out and spent huge money on Kenny Golladay and Kyle Rudolph. You bought in Devontae Booker to be that other running back to share the workload in the running game. All of those things are in an effort to be able to evaluate Daniel Jones and whether or not he's the guy. So he's got to prove that. Everybody's tired of the excuses about the offensive line. They don't want to hear that. Ultimately, when you're the sixth overall pick, you've got to be able to rise above some of the deficiencies that your team has. And Daniel Jones hasn't shown the ability to do that. So if he doesn't get it done and he continues to turn the football over at the rate that he has his first 2 years and one game into 2021, there's no shot that he's going to be the quarterback for the Giants in 2022, especially with them having the kind of draft capital that they have next offseason.
Well, and you know what? It's interesting, too, to think about the one name we haven't mentioned in this, and I mentioned coaching, is Joe Judge. What's going to start to happen if things keep going this way? Because, Chris, I remember we got Giants fans around here. Our producer Shannon's a Giants fan, Devin Kane, who works on this show. And when Joe Judge first came in, and you had him restarting periods in practice, and you had these get muddy fumble recovery drills, and a lot of this stuff that felt a little more college, but you saw.
Oh, don't forget about the wind sprints after you make a mistake in practice too. We can't forget about that, right? And
then the fighting training camp that retired like three linemen during training camp this year.
Yeah, exactly. And then fighting in training camp, and then guys having to run as a result of that. Like, it definitely does have a high school or college feel to it. And listen, that works when the team is seeing the results on the field. And last year, in a historically bad division, you can make an argument that guys bought in because they were in the race for the division crown all the way up until week 17. But this year, if you get out to a rocky start and you don't have the ability to kind of climb back into things early on, you wonder if some of that stuff starts to go left, if some of those guys in the locker room start to splinter because they're just not buying into what Joe Judge is selling. I'm just saying that there's got to be some thought that there's the potential for that to happen. Not saying it will, but there's the potential for that thing to kind of get off the rails over there at 1925 Giants Drive. It's one of those things we got to pay attention to early on.
Exactly. This is not a week one overreaction. This is tacking week one on to what Chris mentioned, what we've seen since that infamous boat picture of the New York Giants wide receiver crew out there, which, by the way, I feel like if nothing else, at least they represented and were wearing Tim's on the boot. Like, you had Timberland boots on a boat in Miami. That much I think we can at least appreciate, and the folks in New York can probably appreciate. So we'll get into plenty more of that. But coming up next, Daniel Jones may not have inspired much confidence. But coming up next, we'll tell you one young NFC quarterback that walked out of week one with his head held high and has people thinking about the future. We'll get that next. Wow, there's the fine.
There's the first fine.
You know what? Cliff, go ahead and cut it. We'll play it back in the next segment here. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Up next, we'll tell you one young NFC quarterback that walked out of week one with his head held high and has people thinking about the future. We'll get that next. Wow, there's the fine.
There's the first fine. That's the remix. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Tweet us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Mike, we got to take a broad brush with this NFC East conversation. We got to look at the other teams in the division. We've been focused on the Giants because they kick off on Thursday night against the Washington football team. But we also got to look at some of the things that made us raise an eyebrow in week one in the division. And chief among them, in my opinion, has to be that Eagles win down there in Atlanta against the Falcons.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. Not only the performance of the quarterback that we'll get to here, Nick Sirianni was a guy that a lot of people looked at sideways after that first press conference here. He was a name that everyone wasn't as familiar with in this last coaching cycle. But, Chris, the game plan he came out with, what Philadelphia did for Jalen Hurts, to me, was about the same as what the New England Patriots did for Mac Jones. I know we got the Alabama quarterback connection here, but each staff met their quarterback where they are currently. They played to their strengths, and in the case of Jalen Hurts, and I heard Dan Orlovsky say this, they took a lot of principles from that offense at Oklahoma. They made him useful as a runner, and they got the ball out of his hands quick in a way that can give everyone confidence, especially when your line looks as healthy as theirs did on Sunday.
No, I agree with you, and I thought they did a good job of kind of keeping the training wheels on Jalen Hurts early on in that game. But the one thing that I will say is Nick Sirianni gave Jalen Hurts opportunities to make plays in the passing game, and there were some receivers that were open downfield that he didn't get a chance to hit, but there are also some opportunities where he had some nice touch on the football. I'm thinking about that throw that he had in the first half to Devonta Smith, that fade route on third down in the red zone, being able to complete that for a touchdown. Like, seeing some of those elements from his game, that's the part of it that surprised me, because I didn't see that in his starts late last season. So seeing that evolution, along with the fact that they can use him as a runner with some of those zone read concepts, I think it adds a dimension to this Eagles offense that we haven't seen in the Carson Wentz era. So I'm starting to be more bullish when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles and their prospects for 2021. Right now, if I had to power rank the teams in the division, I've got the Philadelphia Eagles second behind the Dallas Cowboys. That's how impressed I was with their performance against the Falcons.
If they stay healthy, I think it's going to be that way for the majority of this season, because we know the Washington football team got dealt the first blow on that. Taylor Heinicke now starting at quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick out with a hip injury on IR right now. And believe me, you're not the only one excited about Jalen Hurts. We know it was the Falcons, but we talked to Kevin Negandhi, SportsCenter anchor, Temple alum, and host of the ESPN College Football Podcast. He was on with us earlier in the show and said he wants to see Jalen Hurts get a legitimate opportunity to be the quarterback of the future.
He's one of those guys, no matter who he is and where he goes, people gravitate to him. Okay, he can't throw the deep ball as well as many other guys, but he's not going to try to win games with his arm. He's going to win games with his mind. And that little threat that you could run really breaks down a defense, and that hesitation, it helps him out with the weapons on the outside.
The one thing I could say, Chris, for sure, and Kev brought this up, is everywhere Jalen's been, he's had a gravity to him, right? He draws people in. It factors something that's hard to qualify. But I remember I was fortunate enough to be invited by the Heisman Trust to come and MC their dinner the night before the Heisman Trophy ceremony, the year Joe Burrow ended up winning. But Jalen Hurts was one of the nominees for the Heisman that year. It was him, Chase Young, Justin Fields, Joe Burrow, like the who's who of college football that year. and Jalen Hurts walked in. Everyone else, they looked like college kids. They looked like college players. Even Chase Young, who stared down at me and was terrifying to see in person. There's no doubt about that. Never want to see that guy on a field. But Jalen Hurts walked into that thing, suit jacket on, turtleneck underneath. Presidential was the word that kept coming to mind. Jalen Hurts carries himself like the guy that's ready to be the head of your organization in a way that few players can grasp as young as he has. And so we know he's going to have that stuff ironed out. We know he's got the work in his background from Alabama. The thing I still worry about is top-end ability. He's never going to have the arm to threaten you downfield. I think you're always going to be overcompensating for that some. But we know that's only a small part of the process, and he's at least looked in control every time we've seen him on the field so far in his young career.
No question about it. He has the command of the offense, and I think he's grown in that way this year as opposed to what we saw last year. So I think that from that perspective, the arrow is pointed up with Jalen. You talked about some of the limitations in terms of arm talent, but if you have the right supporting cast around him, I feel like he can be an effective quarterback, and that's one of the things that Kevin Negandhi talked about when he was on our show earlier. I mean, he said he wanted this to be a legitimate opportunity for Jalen Hurts to win this job long term. And if you're an Eagles fan, that's absolutely what you should be rooting for, because if you can answer the question about who your quarterback is moving forward this season, think about the flexibility that that gives general manager Howie Roseman in the offseason, armed with three first-round draft picks because of the wheeling and dealing that they did prior to this year's draft. I mean, it really sets this team up for success, sustained success, and that to me is the beauty of being able to find Jalen Hurts, a gem, a diamond in the rough in the second round. Like, when you have that to build around, when you have that piece figured out, I just feel like it sets the stage for this organization to be in a really good position in a division that's kind of been up and down the last couple of years.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. You mentioned the wheeling and dealing that Jeffrey Lurie was a part of here. Howie Roseman, excuse me, was a part of here. That involved Carson Wentz, the former quarterback of the Eagles, who's now with the Indianapolis Colts. And if we want to heat this thing up all the way, Max Kellerman went ahead and did it for us on Keyshawn, J1, Max this morning. Hurts, greater than sign, Wentz.
Between Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, I mean, Jalen Hurts to me is clearly at this moment the better quarterback. And his team performs for him. Did you notice when Jalen Hurts took over the offense, everyone had a pep in their step, right? Like everyone got juiced.
Of course. I just want to make sure I clarify. You're saying after evaluating one game.
No.
You're saying that, well, are you evaluating what Jalen Hurts did last year?
Yes, against Arizona, especially a game they lost. He showed, he's a rookie. He showed flashes where you're like, ooh, that kid is good. And Carson Wentz has been in steady decline for a year and a half now.
So, Chris, where are you at on that? Is this have we gone a bridge too far already after week one?
Well, here's what I'll say about Max's hot take. It is scorching, by the way. But I guess Jalen Hurts would be the guy that I would trust by default just based on what we've seen from Carson. Like, we know the injury history in Carson Wentz's past, and then you start looking at him and the potential to be knocked out of this season because he's an unvaccinated player. Those things worry me. Like, those things are issues that could potentially derail your season. At least I know with Jalen Hurts, I don't have to worry about whether or not he's going to be healthy and available for my team. That has not been an issue for him in his past, both at the collegiate level and in the NFL. So although it's a relatively small sample size, I feel like I know what I'm getting from Jalen Hurts, even though the top-end ability might not be what Carson Wentz's is. Right now, where the Philadelphia Eagles are, I don't think they need that. They need somebody to stabilize the franchise. The guys in that locker room need a reason to believe in their quarterback, and Jalen Hurts, after his week one performance, delivered.
I agree that he is more consistent right now, and there is a ton of value in that, Chris.
The best ability is availability, MGJ. I'm just saying.
There is no doubt. I don't think he's a better quarterback. I don't think top-end-wise, you're right. I don't think he can do a lot of the things that Carson did, but I think the consistency is what they need. I think you're absolutely right on that. By the way, we're brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, though, the road to greatness sometimes is paved with pancakes. We will talk to one of the men in charge of paving that road next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Dan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And This is a show with big guys on it. We both spent a lot of life over 300 pounds. We both spent life in the trenches. And so when we heard all of a sudden that they were giving out NIL deals to the big boys, specifically centered around pancakes and eating, we figured we had to get in on the action. So we head to the Goodyear hotline now to talk to Ohio State offensive tackle Nicholas Petit-Friere, who is part of the Denny's All-Pancaker team that we want to get into here in just a little bit. But, Nicholas, we appreciate you giving us some time today, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for letting me be on.
We appreciate you giving us a few minutes today. Obviously, a busy time of year for you. And you know, we'll get the tough part out of the way early here. Coming off a weekend with a tough loss to Oregon, a big out-of-conference matchup. What was Ryan Day, your head coach's message to you guys in the locker room coming off that game?
You know, just to keep our heads high. You know, it's a long season. So it's not like it's the end of our season. We still have a lot of games to play, and we have a lot more to do, and we have a lot to prove as a team. And the only thing that we can do now is just to practice better and work harder and fix the mistakes and correct what we did wrong, and then just come back out next week hungry, ready for us to get another win.
Nicholas, what was the environment like being in Ohio Stadium with all the fans there, full stadium? What was that atmosphere like going up against one of those top 25 opponents in Oregon?
Yeah, it was electric, especially with everyone coming back from COVID and everything. To be back with the fans was just a blessing. Just hearing everyone just be rowdy in there and having the shoe be that loud and that electric was just one of the most amazing moments in my playing career here at Ohio State. And especially with everyone just coming back and finally being able to see fans again and have people in the stands, it was just an amazing experience.
Talking to Nicholas Petit-Friere with us, Ohio State offensive tackle. And you're one of the veteran guys in this team. You've played great ball for this team before. You got a young quarterback. C.J. Stroud's been out there through two games. What's impressed you about him in his first campaign at quarterback for you guys?
I would say his composure. You know, it's something that you would think that a lot of young guys would need to work on, something that they would be like, oh, they're probably really nervous in the pocket or they just move around a lot. But C.J., he just stands in there. He's very confident in himself. He's very confident in us as an offensive line and our team in general, which is very great to see and for us to be able to play with. He's just one of the more composed guys on the team, and he's always looking at the bright side of things and very optimistic about everything and anything that he does. So he's been really good in that area.
Nicholas, I know you guys try to focus on your own business and taking care of who's on your schedule, but do you pay attention to what's going on with the rest of the conference? What else is going on with the Big Ten?
Yeah, a little bit here and there, but, you know, only thing we can control is our own schedule, and we can control the teams that we play against, you know. At the end of the day, it's all about how well we play against the opponents that are lined up in front of us, and we just have faith in ourselves, and whatever happens down the lines, whatever happens. So that's all we focus on. We just try to focus on ourselves and just winning every single week, one game at a time.
I'm always curious. We get traditions around college sports. We've seen a couple of new ones pop up here. The number zero now can be worn by players in college football. For you guys, the block zero is a tradition you started last year, giving it out to one player on a team. Thayer Munford, your teammate on the offensive line, was the recipient of that this year. What did it mean for you guys as a unit to get that number worn by one of the big fellas up front here?
I mean, it's huge. I mean, as before, that Thayer is probably one of the most deserving players on our team for him to represent the block O. And us being able to have him represent that for us is huge because we all respect Thayer. He's been a great player in our program for around 5 to 6 years now. And he's the embodiment of what we try to use for the block O symbol. Just someone that has a great amount of character, has been a hard worker throughout his entire career. And it's one of the most gracious, one of the most humbling opportunities to have to play next to him. And for him to represent us being the block O recipient is huge for us as an organization.
Nicholas, what are your goals for the season, both personally and as a team?
Well, as a team, it's for us to go out and win a national championship. So every single day, we're going to practice hard and work towards that goal. And then personally, it's just to do whatever I can to help this team win, whether it's me play whatever position they need me to play or wherever it takes for us to win the national championship. That's been my main goal ever since I got to Ohio State, and that still hasn't changed even this year or the previous years.
Well, one of the things that has changed this year is you guys, college players, can now capitalize and make money off your name, image, and likeness. So what was the moment like for you when Denny's came calling? Again, Nicholas Petit-Friere, part of the Denny's All-Pancaker team, four students and star offensive linemen out here serving up pancakes. What was that conversation like for you?
it was just very humbling, you know, with this new opportunity with NIL. It allows us athletes to market ourselves, not only just as student athletes, but also to market our personalities and things like that. So it was just very humbling that they came out and reached out to me and asked if I wanted to be a part of it. And I was more than willing for me to join the brand and join the All Pink Tiger team. So it's just a very fun opportunity. I think there's going to be a lot more things I try to do with them down the line this season, because they said that they'll help me out. And they'll make sure I'll be able to be a good student athlete. So I make sure to do things on and off the field correctly, but also be able to manage the NIL things as well.
Well, I just have to ask, if given an opportunity, you're put in the right setting here, you're pointing at that menu at Denny's, how many Grand Slams are we taking down in one sitting right now? Are you a two or three guy here? Or are you trying to watch your figure? How's that work right now?
I'm trying to take down as many as I can, you know? I mean, so if I have the opportunity to, I'll definitely do as many as I can. Just try to push the limit, see if I can set a world record or something like that.
See, that's the kind of attitude that's going to make you a champion on and off the field. Nicholas, we appreciate you giving us some time, man. Best of luck with the rest of the season. Enjoy it, and we'll be looking for more pancake content from you coming soon, all right?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Awesome stuff. Again, Nicholas Petit-Friere, Ohio State offensive tackle, kind enough to join us here on Canty and Golic Jr. We're brought to you by Wrangler, introducing ATG by Wrangler, outdoor apparel that gets you there. It doesn't compromise, conform, or call it quits. Shop Wrangler.com. Coming up next, though, from pancakes to cold hard cash, one former pro told his former team, bring me my money. We'll get to that next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Tomorrow on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, Pro Football Hall of Fame coach and Keys former coach, Bill Parcells, as we look ahead to week number 2 in the NFL. Bill Parcells, tomorrow morning at 7:30 Eastern with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We got to keep that same energy before we get out here. But, Mike, we got a little bit of breaking news out of Dallas. This according to Cowboys beat reporter Todd Archer. Dallas Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence suffered a broken foot in practice Wednesday and will miss an undetermined amount of time. Mike, we spent a lot of this show talking about the NFC East landscape. What does this do to the Cowboys' hopes of being able to win this division?
I tell you what, Chris, for winning the division, I think we always kind of assumed that it was going to be with very limited defense, but for anything beyond that, I'd say now this puts a serious dent, because we were banking on some sort of improvement, right? Like Dan Quinn and a new defense going against the defending world champs in week one, we could excuse some things, but we expected it to have to get better, and especially have to get better up front for them defensively. So between that now, questions about Randy Gregory, it's going to be very interesting, Chris. I think this injury puts a ceiling on them, and it's well below anywhere near their goals to start the season. For a franchise that feels like it's Super Bowl or bust, that needs a deep playoff run here, I think they can still win the East, but I think it got a lot harder, and I think anything beyond that right now becomes an extreme uphill battle.
Yeah, that has to be a huge concern, right? That defense, the inability to be able to rush the passer without having the scheme pressure. When you don't have DeMarcus Lawrence, and when you're talking about Randy Gregory potentially being out on the COVID list, like that's going to put a lot more pressure on your linebackers and, you know, third level defenders in terms of being involved in the pass rush. And I don't know that that's a formula that's going to lead to that Dallas Cowboys defense led by Dan Quinn having the kind of turnaround that they're looking for, especially with the youth movement that they've gone with on the back end. So you're right. I mean, I know this was a team that was going to be led by their offense, Dak Prescott and company. But at some point, you have to be able to stop somebody, especially if you want to talk about being able to win a playoff game. And not having DeMarcus Lawrence for an extended period of time, I feel like that puts a big dent in their hopes of what this season could have been.
Yeah, Chris, I think especially for what this defense could end up being. We talked about it. They turned Tampa over a bunch in that first game on Thursday, right? They could be an opportunistic defense. Part of that is having someone that has the ability to break the game open. That was DeMarcus Lawrence for that group. I know Micah Parsons, their rookie, has got some pass rush ability. I know they're going to be able to manufacture something, but you lost a big part of the special. Again, DeMarcus Lawrence suffering a broken foot today in practice and will miss an undetermined amount of time, according to sources telling ESPN NFL Nation Cowboys reporter Todd Archer. So we will get you more information on that. I'm sure Spain and Fitz will have you covered on that as as well. They're following us 7 o'clock Eastern here on ESPN Radio. We will try and end the day on a little bit more positive note than that for you here, Cliff. Let's keep that same energy. Keeping that same energy is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Keeping that same energy first and foremost, thanks to our guests, Kevin Negandhi, Adam Schefter, and Ohio State offensive lineman Nicholas Petit-Friere. If you missed any of those conversations, check all of those out on the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast. Go download, subscribe, rate, review, do all that. I checked. The podcast is there. I know Chris Canty told us it was there. I believed him. I went and checked anyway for us. Make sure you go ahead and throw us some likes there. But how about this one, Chris? Keeping that same energy. Calvin Johnson, former wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. We know there's been a little bit of a rift between him and the franchise for a while. His sudden retirement at the end of 2015 became part of a feud. The dispute stemmed from him being owed $1.6 million. He said in an interview with Graham Bensinger, quote, "I'm not going to close a chapter, but I'm going to bend over, not going to bend over backwards to try and do anything because I didn't do anything. I did my job. I'm not saying they got to repay me the $1.6 million all up front, but they need to figure out a way to do it and not have me work for it because I already did the work for it here." He said, "Bring me my money."
That's the first thing I thought about that meme from North Carolina A&T coach Sam Washington after they beat East Carolina, telling them to run them the check after the game, after they got that big dub. I mean, with Calvin Johnson, it just feels like one of those situations that the organization should go out of their way to do right by an all-time player, a guy that no doubt will be having a gold jacket on soon. So it just feels like it's one of those things that they got to kind of make right in order to try to save face moving forward, because there's been this air of dysfunction around the Detroit Lions since I can remember. So at least Detroit, if you can't get it right on the field, get it right with one of your all-time guys.
Honestly, it's so easy at this point. Like, I get 1.6 is a lot of money, but your ownership in the NFL.
Family. Not for the Ford family.
Right. Cut the check. Do the one thing because he's always going to win because he was good while the rest of you stunk it up out there. So the fan base is always going to like him. So we want to see the beef squash there. Apparently, we don't get to squash any beef around here right now. Bart and Han the other day, really, I mean, it was Bart Scott, felt like coming at my hairline, felt like going with the disrespect. We clapped back yesterday, so of course now we got to have this constant back and forth here. By the way, Bart and Han, check them out on ESPN Radio, part of our great lineup around here. This was the response to the response from the initial shot from Bart Scott here on ESPN Radio.
He got smoke that... As you, when you do your live reads,
I got an associate's degree. It's all good, but I'm getting better. I got hooked on phonics. I've been reading Dr. Seuss, Green Eggs and Ham. That doesn't replace the fact that he does look like Bull. That's a compliment. That's a superstar. That's an icon. He wished that he was as popular as Bull from Night Court. That dude's a legend, man. You hurt my feelings, Golic. This is one of the best ones.
He did hit you where it hurt, though.
Yeah, he hit me where it hurt, man. Don't worry. I can get better. I'm going back to the drawing board. Give me a read right now.
Are you suggesting that
I do like green
you can
and
get
ham.
Better at reads, but he can't get yeah, he better can't. At having hair? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, throw me
are you trying
throw
to say that?
He better call Urlacher, get a bang. If I see him with a bang next week, then you know it's a problem. Call Urlacher, call Wes Welker.
Like Drew
get
Brees,
you a bang.
Drew Brees all of a sudden got himself, he and LeBron.
Yeah, all of a sudden they got hairlines. Witten. Listen, tell him, I'm from the hood. The home of the lace front. I can get him a high top fade if he want one. And waves.
Honestly, keeping that same energy, I wouldn't turn down the waves or the fade. I would take any of it at this point, Chris.
Wow. So you going to rock the lace front wig? You'll be able to put one of those on? That's where you at with it?
Man, listen. Hard times around here. No one's going to pay me to do it like they paid Urlacher, so I don't know what to do in this spot here. I'm kind of out of options, Chris.
Listen, we sell everything else on this show. You would hope that sales could find a way to be able to work that in there somewhere for you. Try to look out for my partner. I'm just saying, if that's something that's a sore spot for you, maybe they could hook you up.
You know what? It's one of those things, though, Chris. At this point, I'm pretty at peace with them. By the way, for what it's worth, just pulling up pictures of Charles Mull, a.k.a. Bull, from Night Court, not totally wrong. I can see what my friend Bart was getting at here and kind of understand it. No, I am proudly wearing my baldness here, Chris, because I know if I showed up back here with hair that I bought somewhere, I would get roasted into the sun by you guys and every group chat I have ever been a part of. Not
That's
gonna do it.
True. That would happen. And you know your teammates are going to be the first ones to flame you. But because they're in it with you, you're willing to give them a pass. But one of the teammates on Barton Hines' show, I feel like he's laughing for free, especially when we're having that hair conversation. I feel like we might have to rope Alan Hahn in on this one, too.
We might have to get him at some point here. We got time for Hahn, though. We do have to wish a happy birthday to one of our own, though. The man, the myth. You've seen him producing content around here at ESPN Radio for so long. Jerry Mayotte. I gave him the French pronunciation. It's actually male hot, which is even better. Inappropriate.
Happy birthday, Jay.
Happy birthday, Jer. We love you, buddy. Stick around here. Spain and Fitz got you next.
You hurt my feelings, goalie.